Good afternoon, everyone. We're back here live at the Ogilvy stage. I'd like you to join me in welcoming Lisa Bodell to the stage. She is the founder and CEO of a company called FutureThink, which is an innovation firm that specializes in training companies to build their own internal innovation capabilities. So today, Lisa will be talking about her book, Kill the Company, which is about ways you can all rethink your organizations and their operations, and to help you empower everyone in your organizations to think outside the box and to innovate. Welcome, Lisa.
Thank you. Okay, thanks a lot. How's everyone doing? Okay, all right. I know everyone's probably ready for lunch, but I'm gonna have everyone get up and interact a little bit. Is that okay with everybody? Okay, no, okay, great. Innovation is about dissent too, so that's okay. So I wrote a book. And it's coming out on May 15th, and it's called Kill the Company. And the premise is this: how we're approaching innovation is completely backwards, and our approach to change within organizations is all wrong. And I think only when we have to take a new approach to change will innovation really stick. And that's what we focus on in the book. We wrote it so you could read it from a flight from San Francisco to New York, and it comes with a full toolkit to help you create change now. So I hope you'll find that appealing. Innovation itself, I believe, is about potential, and not just reaching our business's potential, but our individual potential. And the reason behind that is what we're here to do is actually make change better, not just for ourselves, but everyone around with us. And in order to do that, we have to be able to reach our potential in different ways. So what that makes me think about is a question. Why aren't we reaching our potential? We have so much talk right now in annual reports, in quarterly earnings, on websites and events about innovation. We're spending tons of money, yet we're still not reaching our potential. Why is that? And I want to share a story about potential and why I wrote this book. I'm a recovering ad agency person, and I have great respect for ad agencies. And I was always a very strategic thinker in a very creative realm. And for that, my clients loved me. I was able to take an idea and turn it into a business and create some value. But for that, back at the agency, my creatives completely dismissed me. Don't get me wrong, we're friends. We go to our bat mitzvahs, we go to weddings, we go to baby showers, I go to retirements now. But they made it very clear back at the agency that ideas were not my job. Ideas were not my job. And it made me think of a couple things. First of all, who said that ideas were only important for a certain group of people within an organization? And the second thing it made me think about is, if that's the type of mindset we're going to have, how much potential are we missing? And so what this has led us to believe within organizations is that there's a big problem around leadership, around potential, and a resistance to change. So if you guys will indulge me, I want to do a little exercise, okay? How many people here feel that they are change agents, just by a show of hands? Okay. And how many people here, if you didn't raise your hand, think that at least you're open to change? Okay. Here's what I want you all to do. I'm going to ask you all to stand up, and I want you to find a partner and face them standing together. Can you guys do that for me? Yeah? Okay, everybody stand up, find a partner. I promise you'll have fun. I promise you'll have fun. Okay, stand about arm's length apart. Stand about arm's length apart, okay? You came here to South by to network. Here's your opportunity, okay? I'm forcing you to meet people. Okay, here's what we're gonna do. You're standing about arm's length apart. And what I want you to do between the two of you is pick who wants to be an apple and who wants to be an orange. 5 seconds. Okay. All right. Does anyone need more time? No? All right. You guys are smart. I know why you're here. Okay. Apples, do me a favor. Make a fist and stick it straight out. It's a salute, not a punch, guys. It's a friendly environment. All right. Oranges, just put that fist. All right, excuse me, your palm right up against the fist. Just put your palm right up against it. Can you do that? Good, good. All right, apples like this, oranges, palm up against it. You got it. Okay, everyone got it so far? All right, on the count of three, apples, I'm going to tell you to push. Apples, are you ready? Apples, are you ready?
Yeah.
Good. 1, 2, 3, apples, push. Oh, come on. Push. You can do better. Push. Okay, stop. Stop. Is anyone hurt? Yeah. I'm going to leave here with a lawsuit. Fantastic. Okay, that was great. Apples, so what did I tell you to do? Push. And oranges, what did I tell you to do? What did you do? You resisted naturally. I didn't tell you to do anything. And your first, right, best cocktail party game I taught you guys for tonight. You know it. You know you're going to go, hey, let's be an apple and an orange. So what's interesting about this is you all just access something we call, in its natural human behavior, your lizard brain, your brain stem. Your neocortex isn't working. You're not able to upshift because your natural resistance to change says, I don't want to do that. And what happens with innovation is the same thing. We're busy, we're stressed out, so the first thing we do when something new and novel comes at us is what? We resist, right? And the more new and novel, the more we go, oh my God. So let me talk a little bit more about that. Have a seat and thank your partner, okay? Okay. Everyone's like, I thought I was coming to hear about a book. I didn't expect I'd be burning calories. Okay, so what happened here? We are naturally resistant to change. Now, this is a group who all raised their hand and said, you know what, I'm open to change. And you went like this. Think how hard it is for people that aren't really open to change. Your leaders, you go into your companies and you say, hey, I want my team to bring me big ideas. And what happens when they do? Hey, boss, I got a big idea. Really? It's really big. Oh, my God. Are you sure? It's going to change the world. Oh, I need about 10 years of financial reports. We resist. And the reason for that is companies now are spending so much time on the inside that they're unable to create space for what matters on the outside. Now, the great thing is that companies are telling people to create change and to be more innovative. But the problem is that companies are in no place to do that. Do you know why? The only thing that is more naturally resistant to change than human being is a company. Isn't that true? The only thing more naturally resistant to change is than a human being is a company. So I wrote the book, Kill the Company. And it has a couple premises. Okay? The premise is this. For most organizations, its number one enemy is itself. And we need to spend less time building on the status quo and putting more processes, reports, and things in place. And instead, we need to get rid of the weaknesses and kill the things that are holding us back from getting really innovation going. There are two things, and I call them the two C words, that are really the problem within companies. The two C words are complexity and complacency. The very structures that we're putting in place, right, the processes to get innovation going, are the things that are putting a chokehold on it. If innovation was a process, everybody could do it. Now, the bigger problem is, beyond just putting things in place, what this has resulted in is complacency. And I'll give you this case study of why I really wrote this book. I worked with a defense firm last year, and they brought us in, a group of leaders, senior leaders of the company, and they said, we want you to teach our senior leaders innovation. Innovation is one of our strategic pillars. Sound familiar? Right? It's in our annual report. It's on our website. And I thought, great. And two things happened when we went inside the company. The first thing was nobody wanted to engage. Right? Most of the leaders just sat there like professional skeptics. Let's talk about the future. And they told me all the reasons why things can't happen. But even worse, when we got them to try and dream and think big, they went with it and they said, you know what? We're not really sure we have the ability to affect change, but we'll go with it. And it was like a dimmer switch that came over me, and I said, you know what, I'm going about this all wrong. Rather than having all these visioning exercises, I said, what we're going to do today is we're going to kill your company. And only then did they light up. And we put together a bunch of killer exercises, and I'll tell you, it set the room on fire. We did things like kill your company, and the premise is this. If you were your competitor, what two things would you do to put yourself out of business right now? And it gave them a license to have an out-of-company experience. Right? To attack your problems in a way that's productive as opposed to personal. Because people get really defensive when you attack problems, don't they? And then we did killer questions. Then we did killing stupid rules. I will tell you, it was like they had lighters running around the room. All of a sudden, innovation became productive. You could measure it. You could actually see progress. And so two things came out of this in terms of change. And it was this. To be more innovative, I believe that innovation is not your starting point. Stop brainstorming and start getting rid of the dead stuff. And then the second thing is, to approach change differently, we've got to change our approach. To approach change differently, we have to change our approach. Here's what I think about change. I learned this over the last year, and I'm going to show you a case study. Change cannot be put on people. It has to be created by them. No one wants another change program. Anyone here been through a change program before? They're horrible. The second thing is, I do not think that change can be mandated from the top down. It has to be from the middle out. That means it has to happen from you people, the people that have influence from those that work for you and are respected by the people above you. You're the ones that make change happen. The third thing is, I don't believe anyone wants another 12-step program. They want a toolkit that doesn't handcuff them but gives them guardrails. on-demand tools, right? My day is different every day, and I wake up every day thinking I'm going to control it, and it never works out how I want it to. I need things I can pull in a moment. And then the final thing is, we have to stop approaching change with a big C. It has to be with a little c. And I'll tell you how that worked. So we worked with a financial services firm, and this case study is in the book. And what we did is they came to us and said, you know what, our culture kind of sucks. We don't know how to embrace change. Can you help us? And we recruited 12 individuals that were middle out, senior individuals. And we said, are you guys open to ideas? Do you want to create a change program that'll work? We're going to create it together. We're going to create tools. We're going to create little things that make big change. And they said, yeah, we'll do it. And we said, are you really open to being different and standing out? And they said, yes. And we said, get in the cab. And we took them to Grand Central. And we did something called Wig Out. We went down near the Oyster Bar. Is anyone from New York? Okay, you guys know what I'm talking about. We went downstairs to the Oyster Bar, and we had two bags. Right? Three of the people in the program, two women and one man, had to pick out wigs from a bag. And the other people had journals. And they took those journals, and they stood around the center of Grand Central, and they were to observe what would happen when the people that put on wigs walked around the rotunda. How would people react? Well, I'll tell you, the women were most concerned with which wig they got, which I thought was very interesting. This is Brian. He heads up risk analytics, and he did not want to do this. And he was the first one to raise his hand. I'm open to change. Well, he put on the Boza wig, and he went up around, and he circled Grand Central, and I'll tell you that he didn't just go once, he went three times. And when he got done, he said, you know what, that was kind of fun. He said, the reason it was fun is because I realized nobody cared. Nobody cared. And what was cool about that when we got back to the company is we put together a program that they created with us. We created tools together that we thought would be inspirational for people to try around change. And we also named the group I-Squared, which is Instigators with Influence. And they were to be a rogue group of people that would try little things every day to change behavior. And how we changed behavior was in two ways. We said, what do we spend most of our days doing? What do you guys spend most of your days doing? Just shout it out. Email, meetings, reports. Everywhere around the world, and I've done this with tens of thousands of people, the two things people say they spend their day on are meetings and emails. We spent all our time with these big change programs, but if we could just affect little change in meetings and emails in little ways, we could transform a company. And so what we did is we put together a program with a toolkit, and it consisted of two things, and this is in our book. The first is barrier-busting exercises to get rid of the dead wood, and then the other ones are business building. So we killed the company. We killed stupid rules. We turned impossibles into possible. And then we'd build up the business once the weeds were away and people said, oh, these are tools I can use. We reversed assumptions. We forced new connections. We made them draw ideas in new contexts versus write them in PowerPoint. And people felt very empowered. This is actually a kill a stupid rule exercise. We told people, if you could kill a few rules, which ones would you choose? In 30 minutes, they came up with over 150, plotted them out, and they said it was the best thing they had done all year. Because there was real way to clear growth and simple things they could get quick wins on. And we list some of those rules in the book that you can try. The other thing we did is something called Little Bigs. And this I thought was like the little nugget that we didn't expect. Because what we realized with people is tools don't matter if they don't believe that the bosses or anything that they do is ever going to stick. They don't feel empowered. And so Little Bigs are things like actually telling people that they have to be empowered to make change. They're inviting people to the meetings that normally scare you. They're doing little simple things like rewarding people by ending meetings early. They're little things that help clear the way for growth. So let me leave you with this regarding the book. And I think you'll think it's very interesting with the case studies and other people that have created change in very similar ways. I think that innovation is all about potential. And I think it doesn't matter what your title, what your role, what your function, what your hair color is within an organization, you can affect change. You can affect change. Killing the company is about looking under the hood and really getting to the grassroots of what's wrong and clearing the way for growth. And only when you think differently are you able to do that. And it can be through little ways, not big ways. So I want to close with one quick piece for everybody. And then we can talk a little bit more about the book. And it's a poem I want to read to you from my favorite poet of all time, Shel Silverstein. Does anyone like Shel Silverstein? Yay. I know everyone applauds. Everyone has their favorite poem. We'll talk about potential. Do you know that he came out with a book last year? Anyone know that? He's been dead since 1999. Talk about potential. That's pretty good. Well, he wrote a poem, and it's called The Yeses and the Noses. And I think it hits the nail on the head with this book. And it goes like this. The yeses said yes to anything. that anyone suggested. And the no's said no to everything, unless it was proven and tested. Well, the yeses, they died of much too much. And the no's, well, they all died of fright. But those people that we call the think-for-yourselvesers, well, they turned out all right. So I hope that you all will take a new approach to change. I hope you'll take a look at the book, and I hope you'll find it's very inspiring that you can actually innovate in new and simple ways. So with that, I thank you very much. Thank you. Minutes in case people have questions. Does anyone have questions regarding Kill the Company or anything I can answer for them? Anybody? Please. So the question was around if you're in a company going through mergers, and especially when you have two cultures that are coming together. This is where I really think the whole idea around tools and little bigs are really important, because every group is very different, and every manager and their level of risk is very different. The idea around little bigs is getting quick wins to start traction. And this is the problem with change, right? We all approach it with big ways, not little ones. And so the idea around little bigs is, what are the ways that you can get quick wins to start to show momentum and either get your boss comfortable or get your teams comfortable to work more together? And I think that's how you have to start. It's not the big things, it's the little ones. Anyone else? Thoughts, please. Are you given the chance to do it? Okay, yeah. I think the killing, when I said it, we lit the room on fire with the killing exercises, I will tell you, if you want a quick win in your company and you want leaders to start to think about innovation, killing stupid rules is the best exercise you can do. One, because leaders think, oh, you're being productive, you're getting rid of things. So they'll give you the permission to do it, as long as it's not their rules. They get a little touchy about that. But on the other hand, if you're a leader and you want to show people that you believe in change and you really are determined to move something forward, invite them to kill rules and then actually kill one right in the room. We did a session with Novartis last week with 200 people, and they killed in the room by the end of the day. I think the leader stood up and killed three rules right in the room. And what they realized were most of the things that are hard to do around processes, et cetera, they're not rules that people are identifying. They're things, they're annoyances every day. And most of the leaders don't realize that they're annoying until they hear it. And it actually starts a discussion. So killing a stupid rule is a great thing to start with. Anyone else? Please. Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah. They got rid of, they were very trusting of their employees. So they got rid of a lot of the things around data and reports, which is very hard to do, that really consume a lot of people's time, right? So they made that less frequent. That was one thing, getting rid of the paperwork. The second thing is that leaders showed that failure was okay. That was a very big deal. Leaders participated in the process. So I think that that actually clears the space for change. And they focused on quick wins versus putting big programs in place. I think that what people are tired of is they're tired of change. So they don't want one more big program put on them. They want bosses that know that they can listen to them and help them every day. So they're very engaged in the day-to-day. Anyone else? Excellent. Yeah. So two things happen. The first thing is that they bring up the rules. And let's say somebody, the tech guys are always the ones that seem to get nailed in these kill a stupid rule conversations. The tech guys won't let me do this. One, it opens up a conversation. And I think you have to have a good moderator that says, if nothing else, guys, we're going to open up a conversation for why things are the way they are. And then we actually turn them into open-ended questions. In what ways might we do this differently? And then they start to have a discussion around, are there ways that we might not kill the rule, but change it? So people, by the way, when you do kill a stupid rule, if you can't kill it and you want to change it, you have to say how. Because you don't want kill a stupid rule to become a bitch session. It has to be productive. Good point. Anyone else? Unwritten rules. Yours sounds like more of a need for a little bit more structure and communication versus less, to be quite honest. I think that has to do with company size, to be honest. I think the problem with change is you probably are okay with change because you're going with it all the time. And what I'm talking about here is the people that you're going to go through this ebb and flow, you have nothing, then you put in too much, and then you're going to need to pull back. So even at a small company like mine, and I have some folks here from my company, we're constantly killing rules. I think you can always get rid of killing or changing rules no matter how big or small you are. Yeah. Anybody else? Please. They did. Everyone did it differently. Because when we went into this bank, for example, and people come up with the ideas that you've all heard. We'll go in, we'll have bean bags, we'll get rid of chairs, there won't be tables. That's fine. That would never work at this company. That's why everyone thing has to be created for a company. There's no cookie cutter rule. But the thing that they did realize is that if they want people to think differently, you can't meet in the same place every time. So they had to create more spaces where people could meet. And they had to make sure that the leaders consciously shook up where they met all the time. So, for example, one of the people in charge of risk, they called an emergency meeting because they can't change their conference rooms. And the emergency MS meeting, they had to meet down in the lobby. And people were panicked, because whenever you hear emergency, you think, you've come to expect bad. Well, MS was Mr. Softy, and they were just going to meet outside at the Mr. Softy truck, have ice cream, and hang out, and have a productive meeting, versus sitting in the conference room. So it's how do you, if you don't want to do something permanent, how can you just make sure you shake it up all the time? Please. Yes. Yeah, I do. In fact, some people hive off, right, the experimental things, so it can be safe from risk. So they give it a little bit more guardrails by hiving it off versus sitting in the main part of the company, because I think just inherently you need more experimentation with it versus the rules that sit with the ongoing enhancement type innovation. Those can fit within a different set of rules because it's more known, right? You have a context of which to understand that versus the other one needs a little bit more leeway. You have to put it off in its own area. I think that's all we have time for. That's right. Thank you very much, everybody. I appreciate it.